Hello, I'm Thomas Hona, and this is number 0401, the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0401. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, science writer Andrew Vazekas, the night sky guy, is back on the show to talk about the possibility of life on the moons of Jupiter and Saturn.
The search is on, and it's really quite heartening to see that within our solar system, there are two moons, one around Jupiter and one around Saturn, that now probably are the hot spots in terms of our search for life in the solar system. And I think it would be fair to say that there are even better prospects on these moons than there are on to find life on Mars right now.
Jack Newton is the co-founder of a very unique community called Arizona Sky Village. They are all stargazers who relish the dark skies. Plus, all the homes of their community have their own observatories.
We have over 20 observatories, and some of them are robotic. I have 3 robotic observatories that I can run from Canada. And in fact, last night I took 600 pictures of galaxies looking for supernova, the stars that randomly explode and blow up in these galaxies. And it's pretty exciting making those discoveries.
Relationship coach Frank Kermit talks about those who may be undateable.
When I'm sitting down with someone who says, I can't find anyone, we look at what that person's criteria is. If the person's criteria is completely unreasonable, usually it's a sign that they don't really want to be in a relationship, that they would rather be on their own. They have certain fears of intimacy. Maybe they have deep-rooted fears of abandonment. Maybe they just had such bad experiences that they created this list of criteria so they would never get hurt again, and now they are undateable.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0401 was Thomas Hona, who is an electrician and a faithful listener out in the BC area of this show, the Stuff File Program. Also, he's a pretty witty social media poster. Just thought I'd toss that in there. Thank you very much, Thomas, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File Program, a program that is listener-supported and fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? According to Florida police, and you know a story is going to be good when it starts off with, according to Florida police, a man who was in the mood for some fried chicken broke into a woman's home where he stole food and alcoholic beverages. Police said that they have arrested 34-year-old Ronald Gregory Wesley after being caught by the homeowner frying chicken and drinking vodka in her kitchen. According to the police investigation, after homeowner Samantha O'Neill went to work, Wesley broke into her home, opened the woman's fridge, and took out chicken. He then used a frying pan to make his meal. When O'Neill came home at around 9 p.m., she found Wesley frying chicken and drinking vodka. O'Neill told police that she picked him up and threw him out of her home, which begs to ask the question, how strong is Samantha or how light is Ronald? Anyway, she then called the police, who found Ronald nearby and arrested him. Ronald has been charged with one count each of resisting an officer, burglary, and petty theft. Now, I've seen Ronald's mugshot, and you know, sadly, some of my people unfortunately live up to a stereotype. But I hope when he's convicted that they put him to good use in the prison kitchen. Yeah. A June 2016 police raid on David Jensen's Fresno County, California farmhouse caused a $150,000 mess when sheriff's deputies and Clovis Police Department officials rescued, and I'm doing air quotes, rescued the farmhouse from a trespassing homeless man, with a massive destruction leading to Jensen's lawsuit announced in March. The homeless man helped himself to an ice cream bar, some milk, and half a tomato, but was otherwise unarmed. However, by the time the police standoff ended, the crime scene included more than 50 cop cars, a SWAT team and backups, two helicopters, standby ambulances, a police robot, and a crisis negotiation team. Windows, walls, and wrought iron doors were destroyed. Tear gas and a flash bomb were employed. Jensen suspects that the farmhouse's isolation enticed police to decide that it presented an excellent training opportunity. Waco, anyone? Yeah. Well, if that's the case, everybody seems to have failed. See you in court. Yeah. At a time of growing awareness that some people seem almost addicted to their cell phones and instant 24/7 communication, police in Brookfield, Wisconsin released surveillance photos of a woman in the act of robbing banks on March 25th and 27th while standing at teller counters and talking on the phone during the entire episodes. Acting on a tip from the photos, police arrested 33-year-old Sarah Krause on March 28th. I wonder if she was given one phone call after she was booked. And 39-year-old Paul Perry Jr., sound asleep behind the wheel of his car while the motor was running at 6 a.m. on April the 2nd, was in no position to talk his way out of a DUI ticket, but did offer a gentle challenge to the Youngstown, Ohio police officer. Several times, according to the police report, Perry offered to thumb wrestle the officer to get out of the ticket. Now, from the report, their response was Perry was advised that officers would not thumb wrestle him. So, the lack of a digit duel leads to a DUI. Damn. Not exactly a thumbs up, huh? A petting zoo in Moscow, Russia, is suing an ad agency which rented a raccoon for a video shoot. When Thomas was returned, we noticed he was attracted to women's breasts, claims zoo spokesman Victor Kuryakin, charging that the raccoon was used for an erotic video. A spokesman for Art Minsk said the zoo's claims are absurd, noting that the footage is for an ad on federal television. Well, petting zoo, heavy petting zoo, what's the difference? Tit for tat. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a 43-year-old father and his 22-year-old son argued on April 9th about who would walk the dog at their home on Chicago's South Side. They apparently thought they could settle the issue with a gunfight, and police, who recovered the two weapons, said both men received multiple wounds. The son was killed, and the father was in critical condition. And I'm guessing somewhere in the melee is a dog who is now afraid to pee. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Andrew Fizakis, the night sky guy, is back on the program with us to talk about life on other planets. It was announced earlier in April by NASA that scientists now believe there is a chance that two moons surrounding Jupiter and Saturn could support life. Andrew is a member of the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada and the author of Star Trek, The Official Guide to Our Universe, The True Science Behind the Starship Voyages. He joins us via Skype from right here in Montreal. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Peter.
So, potential new neighbors out there somewhere?
Yeah, I mean, this is really new stuff in terms of pushing the boundaries of the possibilities of where we would find life in the universe. You know, you have to remember that right now we have only one data point when it comes to life in the universe, and that's Earth. There are no other laboratories that show us the variety of life or any form of life whatsoever outside of our planet. So, you know, the search is on, and it's really quite heartening to see that within our solar system, there are two moons, one around Jupiter and one around Saturn, that now probably are the hot spots in terms of our search for life in the solar system. And I would I think it would be fair to say that there are even better prospects on these moons than there are on to find life on Mars right now.
So what we're saying here is that there would be signs that there has been life on these moons, not necessarily that there currently is life on these moons. Is that correct?
Well, actually, Peter, no. I mean, I think if you look at why researchers are so excited is they feel that currently, at this moment, the conditions within these moons that is that they could have a habitable environment right now, and this is why it's so exciting. So to actually find life currently existing, these moons really hold the best chance. Now, you have to remember, Peter, the setup that we're talking about in both moons. One moon is called Europa around Jupiter, and the other moon is Enceladus, a moon around Saturn. And in both cases, what we're talking about is moons that are encrusted right around, all around globally, with a thick layer of ice. We're talking about 5 to 10 kilometers in thickness. And underneath this crust of ice is a large salty ocean measuring somewhere between 50 to 100 kilometers deep. And what's interesting is that at the bottom, on the ocean floors, we think there may be hydrothermal vents that are releasing hydrogen gas. And this is coming out, spewing out in geysers from cracks in the ice on the surface of each of these moons. And so in the case of Enceladus, what was so cool is that the Cassini mission, the spacecraft that's been whirling around Saturn for 13 years, flew right through, dove through these ice geysers as they're exploding into space. And it tasted and smelled these geysers and discovered that 98% of these geysers are actually H2O, the water, same water that you drink from the tap here on Earth, same thing. And then about 1% of that geyser material is made of hydrogen. And the only source of this hydrogen that we can think of is there would be hydrothermal vents in the ocean floors. So we see this on Enceladus, and Hubble Space Telescope has snapped very similar type of plumes emanating from the moon Europa, and we think it's the same process that's going on there as well.
Now, when we talk about supporting life, we're not talking about supporting us. I mean, we're talking about moons that are very cold in climate, are we not?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're not talking about giant squids here either, to put that into perspective. I mean, it's not to say there's no possibility of complex life, because, you know, life as we know it, okay, and remember this, Peter, that our example is only we can go by is what we see on Earth. There are no other examples. We know that there are three basic ingredients to life. One being liquid water is very, very important. We have that in both of these moons. The other is to have the right kind of set of chemical ingredients into the recipe. So things like carbon, oxygen, nitrogen, hydrogen, all of these are very necessary. In both cases, again, we think they exist in plentiful amounts. And then a source of energy that would be needed for life, in this case, metabolism of life, needs to have some source of energy. And we see this source emanating out in these plumes, in hydrogen. This is actually a food source. And if in fact, they're so excited, scientists, that at the news conference this past week at NASA, they said it's like they think it's a veritable candy store for microbes, the environment on these moons. So we're actually talking about life. And if we look at what we see on Earth, if I would take you, Peter, down to the deepest ocean floor here on Earth, I could show you very similar hydrothermal vents, these cone-like structures emanating from the ocean floor with gas coming out, hydrogen, sulfur gas, and then hugging around it are little colonies of microbes and maybe even shrimp, more complex life like that. So something similar may very well exist on both of these moons. That's why it's so exciting.
Now, we're talking the moons of Jupiter and Saturn, two very large planets. How large are these moons? in comparison?
Actually, in both of these cases, these are pretty small worlds, worldlets, you can even call them. In the case of Europa, we're talking about a world that's in similar in size and category as our own Earth's moon. And then in the case of Enceladus, we're only a few hundred miles across. Very small worlds. And so, it's a very alien-like setup that we would be talking about. Remember, these oceans also would be eternal darkness with such a thick layer of ice of 5 to 10 kilometers. No sunlight would be able to penetrate through that thick ice. So it would be an eternal darkness. And if there was any light, maybe it's some phosphorescent light, things like that, that would be emanating near the hydrothermal vents potentially.
So now that this discovery has been made, what's the next step? What will NASA or any other scientific entity, or for that matter, Coca-Cola with bottled water, what's the next step?
Well, when it comes to Enceladus, with all this amazing, tantalizing evidence, we may have to wait quite a long time to get to the next step of actually going there and sampling this environment firsthand, that with a robotic mission, because Cassini is really in the twilight portion of its mission. It's slated to actually do a depth dive into the atmosphere of Saturn in September this year, as its fuel source, on board is running out very quickly now. So this is sort of a capstone science in terms of Enceladus. For the Cassini mission. However, it's a very different story when it comes to Europa near Jupiter. This moon is much closer, about half the distance that Enceladus is, and we're right now currently building a spacecraft called the Europa Clipper. NASA hopes to launch this orbiter in the early 2020s, so in less than 10 years, and its mission is really to investigate exclusively the moon Europa and these geysers that the Hubble Space Telescope has been spying now for the last year or so. And we'll be flying through those plumes and identifying any potential life-bearing compounds as well. And if that mission really turns out with a lot of exciting science, which we really think, most of the science community does think it's going to pay off, the next follow-up mission to that, later in the 2030 decade, we would be potentially sending a submarine that would be able to melt through, land on the surface, melt its way through that ice, and then go into that salty ocean underneath and investigate to see if there's any life down there. So some exciting stuff.
Is this a bigger discovery or a more important discovery than anything that's been happening in the last few decades with Mars?
Well, with Mars, it's been a very slow, arduous process in piecing together the puzzle of what's happening there and what has happened in ancient Martian history. We know that there was water on Mars. Mars fascinates us because it was once very Earth-like. We think in the distant past, over a billion years ago, Mars was had a thick atmosphere, had running water on its surface, large bodies of H2O, and then something went wrong, and we don't know some large climactic shift happened. And of course, we would love to know that with what we know is happening here on Earth with climate change here. We'd like to know what happened with our neighboring world. And secondly, Mars is the closest planet to us that could allow us to survive on its surface, so we could send and colonize Mars. That's our best bet in terms of the nearest planet. So we see ourselves maybe seeding that planet with human colonists in the distant future. But when it comes to finding life, even Mars has less potential right now. It has a more extreme environment than what these moons hold. These moons really are, I think, the best bets for us to find life right now.
Excellent stuff. Andrew, always a pleasure to talk with you. How can people find you?
Well, folks can actually see my monthly column at on Starstruck under National Geographic News. They can go online, log on to nationalgeographic.com, and look for my Starstruck column there. People can also invite them to visit me on my Facebook page, The Night Sky Guy, and my Twitter feed, The Night Sky Guy, as well. I always welcome questions, and I keep people abreast on what's happening in the night sky every day.
Thanks for being on the program with us once again, sir.
My pleasure. Clear skies.
Andrew Fazekas, the Night Sky Guy, and the author of Star Trek, The Official Guide to Our Universe, The True Science Behind the Starship Voyages. You can check out his website at thenightskyguy.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0401, and you'll find the links to both Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, where you can order his book, and also, of course, to Andrew's site. And Patreon subscribers to the Stuff File program, you can hear more of Andrew as we discuss the merits, or lack thereof, of people who believe that the Earth is flat. That's coming to you as a Patreon reward. Just go to our Patreon page and become one of the select patrons of the show. Visit patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. And we thank you for your patronage. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
It's 12 time.
Ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ooh,
ah. You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, the best thing since sliced bread. No loafing here.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the co-founder of Arizona Sky Village. Plus, relationship coach Frank Kermit talks about those who are undateable. We have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and more Stuff File news here on a program that is listener-supported and fan-funded radio, which depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's see what's going on in the world of romance, or lack thereof, in the far-flung corners of the globe, shall we? We got a couple of stories that kind of highlight this little premise here. Story number one, village police in Bangladesh arrested 45-year-old Yasin Bayapari in January on the complaint of his wife, after she had learned that she was not, as he had told her, his second spouse, but rather the 25th of his 28. Police found him at the home of number 27, by the way. The accuser said she had, through sleuthing, tracked down 17 of her competitors. Well, there's an interesting group for a coffee clatch, don't you think? And story number two, a male school teacher reported in February that he had been kidnapped by four women in Lupain, Zimbabwe, drugged with a beverage, and sexually assaulted in what appears to be the return of the sperm bandits, said to operate in the area. Now, previously, police set up roadblocks and arrested three women with 31 condoms full of semen. Okay, aren't you the least bit curious years from now about how some of these women are going to explain to their offspring about how they came to be? What fascinating story do you think they're going to tell, huh?
Eesh.
Well, 31-year-old Tiffany Lee is being held along with her boyfriend in a San Mateo County jail in California, accused of shooting her husband to death. She is eligible for bail, but her bail is $35 million, apparently because she is a flight risk since her family lives in China, and according to District Attorney Steve Wagstaff, our belief is her family wealth is in the $100 to $150 million range. Her family hasn't put up her bail, but nearly 20 friends, family, and business associates are pledging their real estate holdings to secure her release. The rules in such a case say that the total value must be double of the bail amount. So about $70 million in property is being pledged. I was surprised at the number of people that came forward, said Lee's attorney, Jeffrey Carr. She is well-liked in the community and is a straight shooter. Wow. Isn't that what got her in trouble in the first place? Perhaps they should change the Miranda laws to reflect that anything your lawyer says can be used against you, too. And still with San Mateo, the county's narcotics task force arrested 59-year-old dentist Joseph Hirsch at his office after a 3-month investigation after getting a tip. Not only did Hirsch allegedly practice without a license, so I guess I should call him an alleged dentist, but in his spare time at the office, he cooked meth, which I understand isn't really good for your teeth, by the way. According to public records, the office had been open for about 6 months. Hirsch is being held on charges including possessing and manufacturing controlled substances, possessing brass knuckles, and possessing ammunition as a felon. Okay, what's with the brass knuckles? Was he recruiting more dental patients for himself? Interesting. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, authorities at Marion, Ohio Correctional Institution were alerted that a computer on their network exceeded a daily internet usage threshold. They tracked down the computer in question, hidden in the ceiling above a training room closet. According to investigators, lax supervision at the prison enabled inmates to build 2 working computers from parts, sneak them through security, and run cables to connect them to the prison's network. The Ohio Inspector General says 5 inmates were involved, and 1 had used the computers to steal the identity of another inmate. All 5 have been moved to other prisons. They were able to travel through the institution more than 1,100 feet without being checked by security through several checkpoints, Ohio Inspector General Randall J. Meyer said. It's almost as if it was an episode of Hogan's Heroes, he said. Yeah, I remember that show. I see nothing, I hear nothing, I know nothing. Remember the guards? Yeah. Well, now we know how nerds survive in prison. I just wish I could get one of them to come here and work on my aging PC. Please? Pretty please? When's your parole date? Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Take a nighttime drive into Arizona Sky Village in a remote valley in southeast Arizona, and the only thing you can see clearly are the millions of stars twinkling overhead. The village's unlit houses are all but invisible in the darkness. That's the way the residents of this astronomy-loving community like it. The less light, the better their view of the universe. On the line with us right now is Jack Newton, one of the co-founders of the community. Hi, Jack.
Hi. Thank you very much for calling.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So, how many people make up this community?
Well, we've got about 20 regular residents and homes that have been built in the community out of 32 lots that we sold. Most people were waiting for retirement to build their dream sort of getaway. Although we only have, three permanent residents. The other ones, these are their home away from home, and there's a number of them that are Canadian, so that they come down and they can, of course, only legally stay for 6 months, or they become illegal aliens, and we're close enough to the border to understand that problem.
So one of the things I found fascinating in reading a story that was in The Guardian talking about your community is the fact that most of the houses, including your own, have their own observatories.
That's correct. We have over 20 observatories, and some of them are robotic. I have 3 robotic observatories that I can run from Canada. So, in fact, last night I took 600 pictures of galaxies looking for supernova, the stars that randomly explode and blow up in these galaxies. And it's pretty exciting making those discoveries.
In getting in contact with you, you sent me two pictures. I believe you sent me the Andromeda Galaxy and the Orion Nebula. And
I
shared them with a friend of mine, Andrew Vizekas, who was also on this particular show. And he got very, very excited at the pictures you've taken. You've been doing this for years, haven't you?
Yes, that's correct. When I was 11 years old, I got a telescope for Christmas, a little 2-inch one, and every night I would go out just after supper and peruse what was sort of new in the sky. The sky shifts an hour every 14 days, so new stuff keeps coming up. And I bumped into this bright star and put the telescope on it and found it was Saturn, and I could see the ring. And I couldn't believe it, because there was no astronomy books back then, and to tell you how big anything was, or you just saw something from the 200-inch or the 100-inch out of California, and that was it. And so I went to school and tried to tell the kids what I'd seen, and they said, you know, BS. They wouldn't believe me. And so I took my paper route money and bought a camera so I could start recording. So I was doing astrophotography when I was about 12 years old.
That's amazing. Now, as I mentioned, the community you live in, Arizona Sky Village, no one likes to turn their lights on. If I'm not mistaken, you also pull down the shades so that you can't see a light coming from inside. It's very dark.
Absolutely. There's a great hue and cry if somebody leaves their a window blind up, and they've got a chandelier or something shining outside. But it's extremely dark there, and a dark sight. In fact, I took a light pollution map from NASA and superimposed it on a road map so I could see all the cities and their relationship to the light pollution. And I drove to the darkest spot I could find in southwestern United States. And we bought several hundred acres and made the village.
Now, besides your desire to see the night sky and to catalog it as you do, you are also fighting against, just generally speaking, for the well-being of people on this planet, light pollution, are you not?
Oh, absolutely. We beat the drum everywhere, and there's a tremendous connection to health and getting a good night's sleep. And people that are in light-polluted areas or light shining from outside inside don't get proper sleep. And something that is a real issue, aside from the fact that it messes up all the nightlife of animals and confuses them and helps destroy the furry friends and feathered friends. And so it's a real issue.
You also, in addition to living in the Arizona Sky Village for part of the year, you and your wife run a bed and breakfast there too, right?
That's correct. No, it's in Canada. It's in Asuyas in British Columbia,
okay.
Right on the border. And you're actually talking to me from Canada right now.
Okay.
And we open up between May 1st and the end of September. And it's an astronomy-themed bed and breakfast. Everything from the bed sheets to going up into the dome and looking at the night sky through a large telescope. In fact, after breakfast, we take guests up and we can show them stars in the daytime. We can show them all of the main planets in the daytime, up to and including Mars. And they just go away babbling. And, of course, the sun in H alpha.
That is fascinating. So you also have an observatory at your home in Canada as well?
That's correct.
And in Canada, you're located where?
We're in Asuyas in British Columbia, right on in the Okanagan Valley, which is the darkest spot we could find here, or at least the best number of clear nights, actually. Mount Kobo, which is across the lake from us, was site-tested to put the Queen Elizabeth Telescope as the best site in Canada to put a national observatory. And they got I rode in up to the top and sight tested, but ultimately cooler heads prevailed, and they went to Mauna Kea in Hawaii for the Canada-France-Hawaii telescope at 14,000 feet, which is a much better location.
What is the light pollution like in the BC location that you're at? How does it compare to Arizona?
It's about 20% less dark than Arizona. We're 1,600 feet above the valley, and we look out our windows right now, and we see the whole sweep of Osoyoos sitting below us. And most of the light pollution from Osoyoos is below us, so I can still see the Milky Way horizon to horizon here. But it's not like one of the dark sites on, you know, that you'd see in the area like we have in Arizona.
I mentioned the story in the Guardian newspaper. It's not the first time you've received press, and I'm just wondering, has it been like for Arizona Sky Village to receive this kind of attention? Does it draw people who want to come in and partake in what you guys have to offer when you're in Arizona?
Well, we're sold out, so you know, every lot's been sold for quite some time. There's some of them that are flipping that people decide to, you know, after the recession or something, or their nest egg was whittled away, they've made decisions to do something else. But you just have to talk to a local realtor if somebody was interested in a lot, for instance, in our Sky Village. But it's been fantastic, absolutely fantastic, and the camaraderie is incredible because there's an awful lot of techie people that have bought lots, Space Telescope Science Institute people, retired NASA scientists, and so on.
It sounds like, and I know this kind of for a fact, you've been doing this for so many years, since you were a child. I bet it never gets dull or boring looking and finding something in your telescope that you may not have seen before, or just the beauty that the universe has to offer.
Well, I'm number two in the world as an amateur in discovering supernovas, so we do get new things all the time because of the science that we do. So it's pretty exciting in that department. And, you're always finding sort of new things to look at, and especially when you've got pretty big telescopes. I run 220-inch telescopes, and the biggest one on the site is a 30-inch telescope. So visually in those dark skies, you can see things that most other people can't see.
That's fascinating. And again, it's fascinating reading about that article in The Guardian about the community of Arizona Sky Village. Jack, I thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us. People can find out more information by going to your website, which is jacknewton.com. That's jacknewton.com. I thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Okay, Peter, thanks.
Jack Newton, co-founder of Arizona Sky Village. For more information, you can visit his website at jacknewton.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0401, and you'll find links to Jack's site. You'll also find a link to that article in The Guardian that featured information on their Arizona community. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holden.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Thankfully, tax day has come and gone, and by now everyone but the worst procrastinators has calculated whether they were entitled to a refund. But there's one thing most taxpayers never get around to calculating: the amount of time it took to prepare their tax return. According to the Internal Revenue Service, the average taxpayer spends 13 hours every year planning their taxes, going through their records, and then completing all the required forms. As tedious and painful as that may sound, a Washington, D.C. think tank says we actually spend a lot more time on taxes than that. In fact, the group says that the amount of time needed by the average taxpayer to comply with all the IRS regulations each year is a whopping 54 hours. Let's be fair, that's more than a regular work week. Numbers like this reveal that the benefits of tax reform can't be measured in just dollars and cents. The time we could save might be the biggest benefit of all. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Coming to you from the outskirts of sanity, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come, we'll talk about those who are undateable, plus We do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way. And I've got one more Stuff File story that I need to share with you right here, right now, on a program that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, hundreds of condoms that clogged a city sewer pipe led police to raid a massage parlor in Texas and arrest two people for prostitution and other crimes. A real estate agent who had just taken over the property notified police of the blockage at Jade Massage Therapy in the Texas capital of Austin. He told them other tenants believed the business was a front for prostitution. Austin police then launched their probe that culminated in a raid about 6 weeks later, where a woman who co-managed the business was found in a massage room with a completely nude and uncovered male, according to the document. Juan Wang, that's a name, I can't make it up, and her husband Joseph Emery were arrested on suspicion of managing a prostitution enterprise that used two or more prostitutes. Police also discovered more than $60,000 in cash at the woman's home. She and her husband were arrested in March and charged with engaging in organized criminal activity to promote prostitution and money laundering. Well, let's look at the bright side of this story, shall we? Hundreds of condoms clogged the sewer pipe. At least we know they were practicing safe sex. And on that happy sexual note, an interesting segue into our last guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. What makes someone undateable? Is it the color of her nail polish, the way she wears her hair, her tattoos, or the sound of her voice? Maybe it's the limp way he shakes your hand, his bald spot, or his awful taste in clothing. Most of us screen potential dates using preconceived standards, so-called deal breakers, but is that right to do? Joining us back on the program right now is relationship coach Frank Kermit to talk about the so-called undateables. He joins us via Skype from here in Montreal. Hi, Frank.
How are you doing, Peter?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us once again.
Always a pleasure to do this.
So I guess besides that long-winded intro I had, the idea, the simple question is, do we sometimes set the bar too high?
I would say that everybody is dateable and everybody is equally undateable, depending who you ask.
Okay, so now I'm asking you.
All right. It really depends on what a person really considers a priority. And part of what I do as a coach is that when I'm sitting down with someone who says, I can't find anyone, we look at what that person's criteria is. If the criteria is unreasonable, that's different from just being very picky. If the person's criteria is completely unreasonable, usually it's a sign that they don't really want to be in a relationship, that they would rather be on their own. They have certain fears of intimacy. Maybe they have deep-rooted fears of abandonment. Maybe they just had such bad experiences that they created this list of criteria so they would never get hurt again. And now they are undateable because their criteria is simply unreasonable.
Now, those people in that category you just described, are they aware of it or is this a subconscious thing that they do? In other words, are they actively looking to get someone, but they've put up these subconscious barriers to themselves?
They're not always consciously aware. However, when I bring it up to their attention, usually it reveals an attitude of, well, I'd rather be alone than to go through what I went through before. And that is the primary attitude that's making them undateable. They're just taking a very negative approach to dating. So no, they're not always aware that they're being unreasonable. They're just trying not to get hurt again.
And I thought of this topic because last week on the Stuff File program, I had a Stuff File news story that dealt with a couple who were both in jail for killing their respective spouses. And they got married in jail. Now, they won't have a chance to consummate the marriage for another 14 years because that's when the male's sentence is out.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read that story, I remembered and I tagged the story by saying, you do realize that the two Menendez brothers between them have had three marriages since they've been in jail. And I'm sure there are people out there saying to themselves, why can't I find someone? These people do.
Well, the first answer I'm going to give is the people who did end up getting into relationships, number one, they probably made being in a relationship a priority. And number two, maybe they weren't as strict with their criteria as the average person now tends to be. So I'll just give you just a quick example, okay? Just something that we can use for the purposes of discussion. Sometimes a person gets the opportunity for a university education. Once they have that university education, they may decide that they only want to date someone who also has a university education. Not for any particular reason other than, well, I've got a university education, so my partner has to have at least the equivalent to me or maybe above. Having a university education is a great thing, but it doesn't necessarily tell you what kind of life partner that person is going to be. It doesn't tell you what kind of a co-parent that person is going to be. Is it really necessary for you to have that as a criteria? And if it is, it has to be a better reason than just because I got it and I'm looking for the same. When people get into that kind of thinking, where I have to be with somebody who has at least what I have just because, that's when they start down a path of being unreasonable.
So I would assume also that another point is, quite frankly, in this day and age, social media. There was a time when you had to get to know someone. But now you can literally Google their life. And before you get to understand why he or she might have the flaws you see about them online, you have no idea, no understanding about these so-called flaws. You're just seeing it all there in black and white or in pixels. And it rules out people whom you may find very attractive and interesting if you got to know them.
I think that when people go on other people's social media and then make a decision not to pursue dating them, that to me is usually an excuse. They're looking for a reason not to continue dating someone, or sometimes, and this is what I've seen in coaching, well, I was trying to decide between two or three people to date, so they were looking for reasons to eliminate someone, which again is not necessarily a valid reason. So they go to somebody's social media page and say, well, you know what, I really didn't like that person liked this post. I mean, really? You're not taking the time to figure out if this person is compatible with you? The bottom line is most people right now really don't have a life plan. They don't know what they want. And I know I'm being very general here, but when I ask a person who's single, who can't meet anybody, comes to me and says, well, I'm struggling to find someone, and I ask them questions like, what type of lifestyle do you want day to day? What are you offering as a partner? Do you have any plans for the future in terms of, do you even want to have a family one day? Or do you just want to have a child-free existence? Either way is fine. I'm not going to judge somebody for their choices. But most people come to me and they have no concept of having that life plan, not realizing that that is what you find out if someone is compatible or not. Are they on par with your life plan? Do they want the same things you want? If you have that conversation and you take the time to become self-aware, you're not going to be deterred by what somebody says on social media just because you may like it in the moment or not. What you need to do is find out if they are potential partners for you in all the things that are truly important to you. So if I can give just one quick example here.
Sure.
I'm coaching a single parent. And I'll say, okay, you want to get back into dating? What are you looking for? The first things that they start to list are all the things that they hated about their ex, saying, I don't want somebody who exhibits these things. That's when I turn it around on them and I say, look, you have a kid? Yeah. You're a single parent? Yeah. All right, tell me about the type of qualities you're looking for in a co-parent for your kid. Now they're starting to think about the qualities they are looking for. They're starting to understand that, whoa, slow down. It's not about what turns you on. It's about who's going to be a better life partner for you. Once you know what you're looking for, you're more eager to actually take the time to get to know people who prove to be good potentials. Anybody who uses, well, I saw their social media and they're not really looking for anything serious. They're just looking for something to pass the time.
Okay, but flipping the other side of that coin of what you said just a few moments ago about having a life plan and what you want, there's also a point where just because you have a plan and you know exactly what you want out of life, that's not necessarily something to spring up on the first date, I'm guessing.
No, the opposite. If you know what it is you want and you really do have a clear idea as to the type of future you're looking at, there are conversation topics based on that life plan that you can and maybe should share on a first date. At least you'll find out if the person is long-term partner potential, or if you see that there's absolutely no way that you'll ever have a future together, you understand that the most you can have with the person is a short-term involvement. And if you're both okay with that and you're both consenting to that, enjoy your time, have your fun, and just be careful not to get attached.
But if you come across somebody on a first date who says, you know, I want to have three children and I want to have a house with a picket fence and they're giving all this information, doesn't that come off as somewhat desperate on the first date when you hear that?
If someone looks at that and says, wow, you're desperate. No, that person who's saying, wow, you're desperate, that's a person who has some level of fear of intimacy, because these are real life issues. If someone says, look, I really am looking to have a family and the white picket fence and I would like to be married, they're doing you a favor. They're letting you know what it is they're aiming for. You're either on board because you want the same things or you're not on board. If you're not on board, thanks very much. I'm going to let you know now. I'm really not looking to settle down with anybody. Not with you in particular. I'm just not looking to settle down with anybody. Great. You've just eliminated the possibility of something being long-term. Well, do you want a short-term involvement? Are you still interested in seeing the person casually once a month, twice a month, while both of you are still free to pursue other relationships that could become more serious? That's great. Everybody at least knows where they stand, and that is the most ethical thing you can do. The unethical thing to do is to date somebody for 6 months and then say, oh, by the way, I was already thinking that since we've been dating for 6 months, this is going to work out and we should be together and we should get married and we should have kids. And the other person says, well, we've just been dating for 6 months. I have no interest in that. That's unethical.
But in 6 months, you should know that. Just because I say you don't do something on the first date, I would assume in three or four dates, never mind 6 months. And when I say dates, I'm talking about just casual dating. When you get to the point where you're boyfriend, girlfriend, or whatever grouping you're in, those serious discussions have to come up, obviously. I'm just saying in the first date, you know, do you lay all the cards out?
I love what you're saying. I really love what you're saying. And that's the way it should be. And I agree with you 100%. That's the way it should be. But we're not talking about ideals. We're talking about human beings who have repeating behavior patterns. And if somebody is such a people pleaser that they're too afraid for being called desperate, for being called out, or being shamed for expressing what they want, they're not going to bring it up on a first date. Chances are they're not going to bring it up on the 6th, or the 7th, or even the 10th date, because they're afraid of that loss. They're afraid of that conflict. They're afraid of being abandoned, saying, well, if I'm going to express that, the person might run away. Your best bet, and I don't see any problem bringing this up on a first date, that if you have an intent and say, look, I'm really looking for something serious. I'm looking for something that within the next 5 years, I want to be married and have a child. Okay, let's say that's the person's plan. In 5 years, I want to be married and have a child. At least you're letting the other person know, this is my intent, this is my hope, and they have a choice. They can either say, I'm looking for something similar, let's continue to get to know each other, or they can say, I'm not looking for that at all.
And we've got to end it off there because you've run out of time, but it's always Words of wisdom from you, Frank. People can find out more information by going to your website, which is franktalks.com, correct?
That's correct, franktalks.com.
Thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
All the best.
Relationship coach Frank Kermit. You can check out his website at franktalks.com to find out more about his upcoming events and also some of his ebooks that are available. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0401, and you'll find the link to his site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Police were able to nab a Florida fugitive after she sold herself out with a Facebook Live video. 18-year-old Markeisha Wilkerson had a warrant out for her arrest, but that didn't stop her from posting a live video from a Chuck E. Cheese in Lakeland, Florida. The Polk County Sheriff's Office said they were searching Facebook when they spotted Wilkerson's broadcast of a video of herself posting with a Chuck E. Cheese character. The Sheriff's Office contacted the Lakeland Police Department, which dispatched officers to arrest Wilkerson at the chain restaurant. The teen had been wanted on charges for improper display of a firearm and failure to appear in court. In a special Stuff File program scenario featuring some sweet audio, let me have Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd share his own words of wisdom in his own voice.
You know, crazy criminals are appreciated. Stupid criminals are really appreciated. And we highly recommend that when we're out looking for you, that you immediately post all of your information that you can on Facebook, Instagram, tweet it out, however you want, because that helps us.
Thank you, Sheriff. But in all seriousness, how do you feel about Markeisha Wilkerson?
I don't know if she was at Chuck E. Cheese for her birthday or she was at Chuck E. Cheese because that's her mentality level, and she's really 12 going on 18.
Wow. I think that's just a polite way of him saying, she's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0401. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and that's once again 0401. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. We leave you with this deep environmental thought. If we don't do something about global warming soon, eventually there won't be any ice floes left to put our elders on.